Hey Toasties, welcome to the Pyro Toasty Talks podcast, where we are chatting about all things pyrography and art and running a small business as an artist entrepreneur. My name is Renee from It's David and Renee. I am not the host, but I am the MC. We have myself, David, Zona, and Brian of BZ Furfur here today, and we are talking basically about the podcast, what it is, giving you just a general overview of like how it came to be, what we're going to talk about, what to expect, why we're doing this, and yada yada. So I guess this is the official episode number one. Oh, the name of this episode is the who, what, when, where, why, and how of the podcast. It's very technical. So do y'all want to introduce yourselves real quick? Just say hi. David, first.
Oh, hi. Hi, this is David of It's David and Renee. This is what my voice sounds like when I am sick, and hopefully not for the rest of the life of this podcast.
He got bronchitis. Ain't nobody got time for that. All right, next is Zona.
Hi, this is Zona. This is Zona's voice. I do not have bronchitis. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, this is Brian. I am with BZ Furfur. I don't do pyrography, but I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Well, yes, because you're the other half of your business, and David is the other half of our business, and together we do art and business. So you're really good with the business.
Yep.
Cool. Alrighty. So just kind of let's like break down what is the purpose of this podcast? What are we doing? What is this even about? Zona, it was Zona's original, or maybe it was Brian's original idea, I got the text from Zona, and it was just like this random picture, and it was like, podcast? And immediately, I think our brain synced, and I was like, yes, podcast, let's do it. So let's just kind of talk about that. How'd that go, Zona?
Well, what happened was, is that Brian heard us talking one day, and we were just doing our normal banter, whatnot. I don't even remember what the heck it is that we were talking about. And we got off the phone, and he said, you know what you guys should do? And I was like, what? He goes, a podcast. And I was just like, that just makes so much sense.
It does.
And then I got home. We got home because I think we were out somewhere. And he just started fiddling around. And he created that little logo guy. And then he sent it to me, and I was just like, I'm going to send this to Renee without any context.
No context. Just
no context. It was just a picture. It's just a picture. And then you were just like, what is that? Yes.
I was like, excuse me, ma'am, whatever it is. Yes.
Yes, that was, and that's how the idea came around. And I was just like, well, it would be really great because we have some really good conversations. We banter a lot back and forth as friends, but as business people, we talk a lot about what we do, you know, and how life is with the business. That's really how the idea came about. It was really a matter of, We have a lot to talk about. We have a lot of things in common, but at the same time, we have a lot of things, I think, to offer in terms of just like business stuff and ideas and and just life.
Yeah.
So,
I think so too. I think so. What Zona is talking about with like the other conversations we have. David and I, as part of our business with It's David and Renee, we have a monthly subscription group for the wood supplies that we make. And part of that subscription is we have a monthly Zoom chat. And sometimes we're just chatting about whatever. Other times we have chats where we all get on and we're talking about a specific thing. So Zona has been part of that for a while. From the beginning? I don't even remember.
No, not quite the beginning.
Not quite the beginning, no, but from a while now, like months, multiple months. And every time we are on a call together, we have really good conversation. And it's not just us. Like we have, there are other timber doodlers, but I feel like Zona and I are probably the biggest talkers. So we have a lot to say. And because we are both we both have very similar businesses. Like, we don't do the exact same thing, but Zona's a pyrographer and Brian is the business guy. I am the pyrographer. David is the business guy. And so, like, we are both entrepreneurs with our spouses running a business together, and we do similar things with our art, going to shows, going to markets, trying to sell. You know, we have a lot of, like, the same things that line up, a lot of the same issues, a lot of the same, like, celebrations. Like, I know what it's like when you're like, oh, I finally sold that one piece I've been looking at for 5 years. And I'm like, yes, I know that feeling, you know? Like, we can just, like, we just share that same wavelength. So that's what she's talking
David,
about.
I think to say David just does the business is probably not all-encompassing of what he does.
It is not. It is not. I'm kind of talking about, like, more in the Timberdoodle realm. Like, he does more of the business. But, like, as a business whole, we make and sell art, wood art canvases, wood art supplies, and David is the woodworker. He's the carpenter. He's the shop master. He's the muscle. He's the lumberjack. He does all of the things. But he also does flex. Like
shop master extraordinaire.
It's true. It's true. But then he also does, you know, all of the behind the scenes business stuff with accounting and finances and paperwork and legal stuff and taxes. Did I already say taxes? He does all that stuff because, like, it's not that I can't, it's that I don't want to. Like,
yes,
it's that for me, doing those things takes so much more mental work and energy and focus. And for him, it's a lot easier. So it's like, you can handle that. I'm going to do these other things. I do the social media, the emails, you know, all of that. I spend most of my time doing all of that stuff.
Well, we just have different brains. And I think when it comes to the accounting and a lot of the behind the scenes business stuff, like, your brain doesn't run on timelines. And if we miss them, the state is not happy with, like, we can't just be like, oh, I didn't feel like doing the taxes by this due date.
That's true. There's really not an excuse. And, like, it's not that I'm terrible at those things. It's that it's just a lot harder for me to keep track of them. But, like, if you give me a deadline, it's due today. Like, I'll make sure it's due today. I was always the student who was, like, turning their paper in, like, right on time or a day early. Like, I had, you know, I can stick to a deadline, but it's just not my strong suit in the terms of business because I'm so consumed with all the other things. But anyway, so, yeah, we have a lot of similar things, and we've become biz besties, and now we've met each other in person a couple of times, and so we're, like, real besties, and it's great. So now we're doing this podcast, and it's like, we have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I mean, I completely feel you with the whole, I just don't want to do all the adulting businessy stuff.
I know.
I mean, and honestly, that's just the bottom line. I'm fully aware that it has to get done. I just don't want to.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather be making the art and playing with my paint. Like, I don't want to sit in front of a spreadsheet.
Exactly. But I mean, the truth of it is, like, there are, like, Brian created the spreadsheet that I use to keep track of, like, all of the things that we buy, all of the things that we sell, like, all of our pricing and all of that. But I use it because it helps. I mean,
I hear a door. Cat. Is that a door? Is
that's
that
actually a cat.
That was Frankie.
Oh, yeah.
That was Frankie. So I can, and I do the taxes, like the quarterly taxes for the most part. But he does all the
Brian's face right now.
The wordsmithy stuff.
I just wanted to add one thing in. So you said the spreadsheet. I just want the listeners to know that there are several several nouns that have become proper nouns in our vernacular. So, like, the spreadsheet is an actual thing. Like, that is, you know, something that we created that helps with the business, or, like, the toolbox. Like, we're not very creative in how we name things.
Yeah.
Like, we'll just, like, you know, just take whatever the noun is and just put the before it, and it becomes something that we, yeah.
And put the TM trademark logo at the end.
Exactly.
The spreadsheet registered trademark.
The spreadsheet. Well,
the spreadsheet is a living, breathing thing at this point.
Honestly. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing that what I've noticed. So we do quite a few markets, We go to, there's a couple of different vendors that are, or companies that do markets in the Charlotte area where we are. And we get a lot of kind of the same things from small business owners who are artists, right? So we've been doing it for about 3 years now. And what I've found from just, because a lot of times, since it's the two of us at the markets most of the time, I'll usually take a break from selling and just walk around and talk to some of the other vendors. And I find consistently that there are, first of all, there's constantly new vendors, right? It seems like there's, every time we go, there's half of the vendors, it's like their second or third market. They haven't been doing it this long. They don't really know what to do. And they've got a ton of questions. And it's always the same questions. And it's always the same questions that we had when we started. And I feel like as somebody who's been doing this for a while, it's really, really helpful to sit down and you know, give these people some advice. And I think that, you know, just trying to give them that advice when you're hanging out at a market, it's really hard to kind of convey everything. Mm-hmm. But in a format like this, you know, we can focus on topics. People can listen to one particular podcast that's covering a topic that they're interested in. It's a little bit easier than reading a blog post where, you know, you have to like sit down and focus on it, mm-hmm. or a YouTube video. You know, this is something they could just plug their ears in and listen to, get some information and, you know, hopefully retain some of that so that they can apply that in their day-to-day business activities. I really feel so bad sometimes because some people, they're just like, it's like deer in headlights, look in their eye, because they're, you know, they just, they don't know what to do. They don't know if they're doing something wrong, especially, you ever go and have just like a market that's a complete bust?
Yep. Been there and done that.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes you see somebody who, it's their first market, and it is dead.
It's like a killer, and you can just see, like, the hopefulness, the joy in their eyes, like, drain. And it's honey, it's okay. I know.
Yeah.
And you go over and you buy, like, something for them for, like, $5 just so, you know, they kind of, you know, to kind of help ease the pain a little bit.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a lot of times, you know, not to say that I wouldn't buy something from them anyway. You know, most of the vendors that we've had the luck of sharing spaces with have, you know, make really nice stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes you just got to remind them that, you know, it's not always the fault of the makers. You know, sometimes it's the people hosting the event, sometimes it's the, you know, just the area or, you mm-hmm. know, circumstances, sometimes it's the weather. There's so many different things. We were at a market one time. We paid a pretty hefty price for it, and it was in a convention center, and it was 3 days. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we were stoked. We thought this thing was going to be killer. You know, everything that we heard about it was good. It looked like they were marketing for it. We get to the convention center, and they were having another event in the convention center as well. And we find out that somebody on a local news program or a local radio program told people, oh, hey, the convention center's all jammed up because of something that's going on there. Don't go that way. If you have plans to go to the convention center, don't mm-hmm. go to the convention center today. It's chaos. And it was just, it was probably,
super upsetting.
How many vendors would you say were there that day? It must have been at least 100, 150.
There was probably about roughly 100 vendors there. And this was big. It was a big space. And I think in any other given time, it would have been phenomenal.
Sure.
Like, we've gone to convention centers and been like, holy cow, look at the crowd that's here. And it could have been. Because in the same building that we were in, there were two or three other things going on. But it was like, it was a couple of buildings together in one big spot. So, and there were other things going on in the other buildings. So, like, there were people there, right? And it was, I mean, they did they did advertise. They were advertising radio and on TV and, I mean, social media. I mean, they did the advertising.
Sure.
Thing. And it was like, I mean, even outside the convention center, like, you... It wasn't like it. Sometimes, you know, you go and they're just like, well, there's no advertising at all outside of this spot. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, how is anybody who's just driving by supposed to know that there is a market? Because there's nothing pointing to that, right?
Yeah.
And that's a frustration. But they did. They had the stuff. They had the signs and whatnot. And it was just such a blow that someone on the news said, on TV said... Yeah, avoid the convention center because it's a madhouse trying to get in, and this, then the other, and it was just like, you just cost everybody.
Yeah, they probably have money. No idea, like the consequences of what they said. You know, they're just thinking they're being helpful to like the daily commuter or whatever. Like, oh yeah, here's a helpful hit, but like, but do you know what you just cost everybody? Like,
yeah,
you have no idea.
It was really unfortunate. Like, there were, and we spoke to some of the other vendors who were there, and a lot of them were staples that essentially traveled with the people that organized it. Like, they would travel with them, and apparently this particular company did big time shows throughout the year, and they made money. And like, I was talking to them, and they were saying, well, this one's okay, but then there's the one that's coming up in like 2 months in a different state, and we always sell out, and this and the other. And it was a lot of consistently people saying that followed them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wasn't like just one vendor. It was quite a few. So it was just, it sounded like they, you know, they charged a lot, but they made a lot for their vendors. And this was just... a poop show.
Yeah.
And it was really unfortunate.
The point though is that, you know, like somebody, if that was their first market they did 3 days of that and paid what they paid to get in there, they'd pack up their bags and never do this again.
Right. Yeah. They're thinking they're a failure. This is terrible. Why do I even bother? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and just luckily we were not in as tight a financial restriction as some people can be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm just thinking, like, if you have a full-time job and you're deciding to start a business, you're probably putting X amount of money aside to start your own business, right? And let's just say it's $5,000 for the year, right? But you've got to make this $5,000 last the entire year. So if you're spending, you know, just to throw out some numbers, let's say $1,000 for an event that you think that you might get that money back, and then it's just a complete bust. Well, you've just spent $1,000 on
your
yearly budget on completely nothing. But so now, you know, and it's just really rough because now you're thinking, well, you know, you were banking on, oh, I'm going to make $5,000 over 3 days.
Sure.
You know, and then it's just like you're in the negative.
Yeah.
But now you've got to make this $4,000 last the rest of the year between buying product, you know, making the product that you're going to sell, between fees and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was disheartening. It was really disappointing.
Yeah.
So, but, so...
So it sounds like we've got some hard-earned experience that would maybe go towards why people should care what we have to say about these things.
This is true. Yes. Yeah, back to like the who, what, when, where, why, and how.
Almost exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's true. Like, we've both been through a lot of really good stuff and really terrible, crappy things in our businesses. Mm-hmm. And I think just like the purpose of this podcast to be able to share that and connect with people and talk about it in a very like real and casual way is priceless. And like, this is the kind of thing that I think people, other artists, entrepreneurs, small businesses, like, they would turn this into a class or a course and like charge for it. And it's like, yeah, there's some really good stuff that we're probably going to talk about here in future episodes that's like, people would pay for that money or pay for that information. But like, I don't want to charge for that. I want to talk about it openly. I want to share about it because like, everyone deserves to have the best information at their fingertips that they can. And if this is a free resource that we can put out there for people that's actually going to help, then, like, yeah, hot damn, let's do it.
Well, and, like, when some artists, when any artists are doing better, all artists are starting to do better. Like, if people value art and we can have successful art businesses, it's better for everyone. And every small business that is a success changes,
benefits from it,
you know, benefits mm-hmm. yeah. the small business environment as a whole. So I don't know. I'm looking at our notes and I was thinking, it said about knowledge we wanted to have when we first started. You know, we went to a small business like mentor at one point as we were trying to figure out how we were going to even start this with just some basic questions, and it's too general of knowledge. And so, like, having industry insider type of thing. Like,
industry specific. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. This is what it's going to be like when you go to a show. It's probably going to suck the first time. Brace yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I part of, you know, just who we are as people, I think I'd like to think we're straight shooters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I wish I had when I first started, even at that very first show that was also a bust, when I was the one with the deer in the headlights, like, I had stars in my eyes, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh great. And then it was just like, the heck is this?
Well hold on, that we spent more time in that market trying to keep the tent that we bought from blowing away because we bought the cheapest tent we could possibly find on Amazon.
I feel that.
And it was like falling apart and it was like a really windy day and we were set up in this area that's like a wind tunnel. So like the entire day, it's like the canvas is getting ripped off the top of this thing.
The thing was falling apart. I mean, we can get into, like, that's future episode.
That's
story.
Good content right there.
That is good content, and we can get into the tools. I think that's coming up in one of our episodes. But yeah, somebody remind us to talk about, like, that tent. Man, holy cow, that tent.
We've also had tent horror stories. I think everyone who does outdoor markets has a tent horror story.
Yes, but, like, you know, I wish that someone had been honest with us about what we really needed and not, you know, oh, we'll just get a tent, right? Okay, well, we're just going to get a tent.
What tent?
You know, but they don't, exactly. Like, get a white tent. That's all that we were told. And we were just like, okay, and like, we're like, okay, cool. Now we're searching for it. And we're like, what? Like, there's so many different varieties and mm-hmm. things to know. And, like, along the way, we heard, you know, oh, well, you shouldn't get this kind of tent because of this reason and that reason. And, like, oh, but you should think about this about the tent and that about the tent. And it's just like, well, damn, if I had known that, we probably would have done different kind of research.
Right.
Instead of just, like, okay, close our eyes and throw a dart and then be like, that's the tent that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, like, that's just one example of the things that I wish that people didn't gatekeep, because what, like, that information, what does that cost you as a different vendor? What does that cost you to tell me and give me, you know, a hand, to give me a hand on how to succeed at this? What does it cost you to tell me your tent is crap? This is what you should be looking for, and these are the things that you should be thinking of. This is how your setup is okay, but this is how you can make it better. What does that cost somebody to be honest but kind?
Sure.
You know, and it just seems like there's just, we've met some that seemed, how do I put it? Like, they were only willing to share that information, but they had, I could see the wheels turning in their head, like, what do I get out of this?
Yeah.
What do I get out of sharing this information? And it's like, but you don't get anything out of the information, but it doesn't cost you anything either.
It's just being a good person.
Exactly.
With a good
and
heart.
I'm like, exactly. Mm-hmm. And but I'm also a super big believer in karma. Like, what you put out there will come back to you. Like, if you're kind, it doesn't cost me anything to be kind to the brand spanking new vendor across the way who is just utterly terrified about what's going on, you know, and just having just a chat, you know, and telling them, listen, if you want to, if you have questions, here's my business card. Give me a shout. Mm-hmm. It costs me nothing.
Yeah.
Real quick, craft show karma story. So we were at a place, outdoor show with a
Is
lot
this
of
the Campbell
people.
Lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it started getting windy and everybody's little Amazon tents were starting to pick up and fly away. And we also have a, quote, the toolbox that has all of my, like, I'm prepared to, like...
He's prepared for Armageddon.
I'm prepared to sleep when we go to a crash show. Like, I'm prepared to spend the night there if I need to.
You get your rucksack?
Yeah.
Correct. We have hammocks in the back of the car. Like, if worse comes to worse, we are prepared.
But, so everybody's tents started moving, and I started running around with the toolbox, and I was just like... Hey, can I stake you down? And I just started like staking everybody's tents down.
And oh, at no, the end, that wasn't the Candle Lady. That was the dog show.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, this was the. Okay, sorry.
And then by the end of the show, I went back around and I came back and I was like, ooh, well, this person gave me a free scented candle for saving their tent. And this person gave me a muffin. And this person.
Yo,
I was
okay,
like,
that candle is the best candle I own. She, okay, it's called the Gray Owl Candle Co. I'm just going to give her a shout out because she's awesome. The Gray Owl Candle Co. was at this Small Business Saturday at this local coffee shop. One of our local coffee shops, they let like a new artist come in and sell their stuff every month. And then at the end of the year, all the artists that sold that year get invited to like their parking lot Small Business Saturday like thing. So they all come together.
Oh, nice.
So anyway, we were there and this candle maker was there and we hadn't met before, but I guess David had like staked her down. And at the end, I think you were going around to like recollect your tent stakes.
Well, I'm not losing them. Those are my stakes.
Those are your stakes. Yeah, so he was going back around and she was like, oh,
I mean, you must have put out a gross of them. I mean,
exactly. Like, how many were you carrying
Probably
around?
Probably two
David?
Dozen. Like, our toolbox is. It is a unit, an absolute unit of a toolbox. Anyway. But yeah, no, we come prepared, and the candle is the best candle I've ever had. It is a soy candle. It's burned for so many hours. It has lasted so much longer, and it smells so good. And the scent was like blueberry waffle cone
Ooh.
Or something like that. And it is, I could eat it. It is so good. Anyway. Anyway,
don't eat it,
big
though.
Shout out to her. And then I left her like a really big review on her website. And I was like, nice. This candle is the best candle I have at like, because like she's a small business too. Like, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, I think that's what it comes down to. And David, you said something interesting a few minutes ago. You said about why do people not want to share their knowledge, right? And Zona, you kind of elaborated on that. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason why people don't want to share their knowledge is because they want to eliminate their competition.
Yes.
Right? They see other vendors as competition, even other vendors who don't do the same thing that they do. And I think that there's a level of expertise that you can have that can serve a particular group that maybe other vendors aren't serving. And I think that's what you have to do. You have to focus less on trying to eliminate your competition and more on trying to separate yourself, distinguish yourself from the competition so that somebody can go to that candle maker and buy a candle and then come to your tent and buy a piece of art because there's enough difference between those things. And if you're at a market and there's another pyrographer, don't think of it as, oh crap, there's another pyrographer. I hope that everybody passes my booth first because then they'll buy my stuff instead of buying her stuff or his stuff. I think it's better to think about it as, what am I doing with my art to distinguish myself from these other vendors who are also making things that are great, who are also making things that are worthy of people's money, but mine is unique in such a way that they could go and buy a piece from both of us and be content and happy with each one. I think that a lot of people miss that. They just look at it as competition. I remember when we were at one market, there was somebody next to us. when people are shopping in our, this has happened several times, people are shopping in our booth and they're like calling them into their booth to come look at something or come talk to them about something. And it's just obnoxious and rude. And again, if you're a new, you know, somebody new to this, that's going to be so defeating.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to feel like you've just been, we were at one, it was Pride one year. We were in the, like the tent that they had all of the small businesses, the, like the community tent or something like that.
Neighborhood market. They neighborhood called it market. The neighborhood market.
Okay.
There was this woman there and she had like all this stuff, like a fan and stuff like that, that made noise so that every couple of minutes she would go and do something that would get everybody's attention. So you'd have people shopping in your booth and all of a sudden she would like whip out this fan and make noise and everybody would turn around and then go walk over and see what was going on over there. And it was just like, that's unnecessary. You know,
well, it's the other thing is that because she would do it and it would be very sudden, so it would like spook people. Mm-hmm. And it was very loud and it was actually annoying. And I think if you spent enough time in the tent, it was just like you heard it several times and it was just like aggravating. So people were just kind of like rushing in and rushing out type of thing. And
it was great for her because it got people's attention, drew the attention to her booth. Mm-hmm. But it's at the cost
of everyone else though.
Mm-hmm. It's a bad business practice. Yeah, and it was. It's like what in technology, what we call anti-patterns, right? You know, it's doing something that maybe works for you, but it's morally, you know, objectionable and just rude.
Yeah. And I mean, it's hurting other people. Like, I totally get doing a demo on site or, you know, being able to use your product and show it. But like, you have to be self-aware enough to know and care enough to care about the people around you and how it's going to affect others. Like, so I'm all for a demo, but that's bad taste.
Oh, she got shut out. She got shut out too the second day. She came back the second day and everybody had rearranged their tables and she was like one of the last ones to come back that day. And she couldn't figure out why she couldn't get her table. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, we kind of rearranged things. And then she had to go like all the way in the back.
Yeah, she was none too pleased about that. But ooh, it was also, I mean, it
it's
was
like
also,
watching karma in progress.
It exactly. was also a matter of like, because it's a 2-day event. Charlotte Pride is a 2-day event. And like, you know, you're told the hours on day one is this to this and day two is this to this. And I mean, granted, on day two, we don't have to set up again. But, you know, if you're told to be here at a certain time, mm-hmm. you be there you at a certain there. Time, you know, and the way it was in that tent, we had rearranged the things on day one because it just was not conducive to selling for us. Mm-hmm. So we rearranged it that made it conducive to us. And then on day two, like we found out that some people were not coming back on day two. So it was another more rearranging. And then she wasn't there and people were just like, okay, we're gonna do what we
wouldn't it be a shame if she didn't fit, wink, like
too pleased. She was very cranky on day two and it was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand both points of view there. Like, yeah, you were actively hindering all of us. We really don't want you here doing that. But I also can feel for her, like showing up thinking you had a great day and like totally oblivious to the fact that people don't like you. And it's like, I don't know, I feel like it's a kid at the playground and nobody wants to play with you, so you have to go sit on the buddy bench, you know? It's like, oh, but at the same time, you kind of had that coming though. Like,
yeah. Well,
I mean, I think somebody might have mentioned it to her because on day two, I think she did it once, maybe twice that day.
That's a lot better.
Yeah, yes. That was a lot better, and that was, you know, more appropriate.
Yeah.
So, what can we expect from this podcast?
I wrote non-scripted, raw and real conversations.
Check.
Yes. Because, like we've already kind of touched on, like, I'm not here to gatekeep. I am here to actively openly share about my experiences, my thoughts, what I've learned, what I haven't learned, what I know, what I don't know. And like, people should be able to benefit from that. And I want it to be raw. Like, you know, we don't have like a super, like, Brian is the producer of this podcast. That is his self title that he gave himself. But like, we don't have like a production, like a full production with an intro and credits and sponsors and ads. And like, we don't have all that. We wanted this to be a very simple, like, casual podcast. Like, we're just sitting across from each other having coffee. And like, I think it's doing a pretty good job so far. So like, the way we're doing it, just kind of like a little bit behind the scenes for the listeners, David and I are sitting here with headphones sharing a mic, and Zona and Brian are sitting there sharing a mic, but we are FaceTiming because they live in North Carolina and we live in Pennsylvania. So it was this whole thing of like, well, how can we do a podcast where we're not going to be in the same room? You know, it's not we're all together. It's like, okay, we have all these different elements. We have to make sure our audio is working and the camera's working and the notes are like, so anyway, where was I going with that? Oh yeah, so like so anyway, it's like a FaceTime conversation. It's like, you know, we're just sitting chatting with each other, but like, it that is literally what we're doing. We're not here to like give like a formal presentation at your alma mater, you know, like, no.
We're definitely unscripted, and I think that is exactly what we are. We are definitely unscripted. I don't think we'd do too well if we were super scripted.
Yeah. Honestly, well, exactly. That's the best way I know how to be me, is to just show up and be myself. Like, once you start trying to put on a face or trying to like live up to a standard that you think you should be living up to, then you're no longer yourself. So it's like, okay, I'm just not going to stress about this. We're just going to log on and FaceTime each other and hit record and like see what comes of it. Like, that's what we're going to do.
So I, for anybody who's listened to podcasts for a long time, so I mean, I don't know when I started listening to podcasts, maybe about 10, 15 years ago. This is the way that podcasts used to be, right? I mean, generally, they were just a couple of people from an industry or, you know, who share a passion, just having a conversation about things. I think it's more recently that a lot of, you know, like radio stations and big production companies have taken on a lot of the podcasts or bought out a lot of the podcasts or just started producing their own. And they're different than they used to be. And I think that that's fine. You know, like, people, you know, if you like true crime, then podcasts are for you, because there is hundreds of them and they're all very well produced by Dateline and other, you know, big production companies. But there's still a lot of podcasts that just have people, like in my industry, in web development, web design, there's a lot of really great podcasts where people just sit and have conversations about things. And I feel like those are the ones that you gain the most from, and you almost feel like you have you feel like you get to know those people in a different way than, you know, if you're just listening to somebody tell you how to do something in a very scripted way.
Yeah, I completely agree. So we're kind of like bringing it back down to the basics. It's like, you know what? This is what we're going to do. We're just going to show up. That's our next little bullet point over here. What can we expect from the podcast topic-wise? We're here to kind of talk about everything encompassed within the realm of pyrography, but also small business and art. So like, for the pyrography stuff, we want to talk about wood. We want to talk about our burners. We want to talk about how we add color, how we do animals. You know, we want to do very specific pyrography things, and all of that is coming in future episodes and such. But, you know, like we've already talked about, we want to talk about the markets. We want to share our experiences. We want to talk about the taxes and the way we do accounting and the way we have the spreadsheet TM, you know, like, that's all such good information that people in our community, pyro peers of all skill levels, like very beginner wood burners who maybe haven't even picked up a wood burning pen or tool yet, but they're like, they pinned it on Pinterest because it's something that they want to do someday, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe they're aspiring to that and they're like, oh, what's this podcast about? I could maybe listen to that. But then it's also good for like professionals and other people who are really trying to make this like a full-time income thing for themselves. So mm-hmm. I think we have a really good spectrum.
And I don't want people to think that this is just for people who the form of medium of art that they choose is biography, right? I mean, I think a lot of the, especially the topics on markets and things like that are, you know, they're applicable to a wide range of
absolutely
artists who are trying to start a business. So hopefully we'll try to tag the podcasts as best as we can mm-hmm. so that, you know, people can find them. But I'm really hoping that people can, you know, come across a episode on, you know, doing your accounting. It doesn't matter what kind of business you're running. You've got to do accounting.
Yeah. So. And like the way I do it could be super beneficial for others. And the way y'all do it could be like, oh, wow, that makes so much sense. You know, so it's definitely not just confined to the pyrography community.
I mean, you know, the hot topic, right? There's the hot topic of pricing our art.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah, that is the big one because everybody does it differently. Mm-hmm. And as much as it would be really, really nice to have this, like, grand formula that everyone uses or that everyone can use, like this baseline, this just not... It's not how it works.
Right.
Right. Because there's just so many different variables. But hopefully, like, someone can listen to us talk about how we do our pricing, you know, and maybe glean some sort of hint or information or, you know, an idea from it that's something that'll help them. And just like they'll do with you when you talk about it, you know, they're like, well, that doesn't quite work for me, but that works for me.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. I mean, and that's really, I think, the grand purpose of the podcast is talk about what we know it as experts for us, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm not trying to sit here and say that I am the expert in pyrography, far from it, or as a small business or whatever, but you don't want to gatekeep the information and the things that I've learned.
Right, yeah.
So far about this, like... You know, one of the grandest things that someone told me the other day is I met another artist and she actually, I work with her also. She supplies me with fractal art wood. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have a business thing going there where she makes those canvases and I burn onto those and we do business that way. But we were talking, and she was telling me about how disappointed she was that they didn't sell anything at this market. And normally, usually, they sell out or come close to selling out. And she was so surprised, and she was really disappointed and, you know, whatnot. And, you know, and then she was talking about how she had a really difficult customer, this, that, and the other. So she was calling to vent to me, mm-hmm. whatever, and get my, you know, how do you deal with this? You've been doing this longer. Like, how do you handle this? What do you think I should do? How do you think I should handle this? You know, and I was giving her my opinion and my ideas. And she said to me, I think of you as my mentor mm-hmm. in business because you've been doing this longer. And it was just like...
Me?
Exactly. Like, what? You know, like... I am more than happy to share my tent with you at Pride. I'm more than happy to share my knowledge with you. I'm more than happy to share, you know, my experiences and see what you get from it. You know, I didn't think of it as like me mentoring her per se. Mm-hmm. I just think of it as I word vomit and I just talk and I want her to do well. Because she's a really great person and her stuff is actually like freaking phenomenally cool. Like her and her wife create some really great stuff. So like, I don't know. I want her to do well, mm-hmm. you know, and if that means, you know, if it means me giving her information or just letting her vent and whatever, I'm all for that. So it was just like her saying to me, well, I think of you as my mentor. It was like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
you know. So, I don't know. I guess somewhere along the way, it's kind of like I kind of hope that the podcast kind of goes towards that way also for other people.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Giving them some hope and
some direction.
Exactly.
Even though
definitely like, the direction.
It's kind of like how you said, like, I definitely don't label myself an expert. Oh, sorry. I don't label myself an expert. I would never be like, oh, I am the expert, like trademark capital THD, you know, but like I do have experience and expertise that I can share and I know it's valuable to someone. Mm-hmm. So and you said one time, like, I don't exactly remember the wording, but you had said like there's someone can always learn something from someone. Like everyone has something mm-hmm. to share.
Yes.
And I just think that that's like part of our contribution, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you can learn something from everyone.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel.
You think you can learn
it might be a little tiny. It might be a good thing that you learn. It might be a bad thing that you learn. But you could learn something.
Well, how long have you been running It's David and Renee?
We started David and Renee's Woodworking in 2018, but we did not become an LLC. We were a sole prop with David and Renee's Woodworking. We became an LLC in 22.
This will be our third year full time.
Yeah. So like December of 2021, David put in his notice at his job and we had contacted the lawyer to get set up with an LLC. How do we do it? How do we register? You know, all that. So that was kind of, it is now May 2024 and that was January 22. So yeah, going into our third year, but we've been doing this, I would say unofficially since 2018. So we've got like 6 years under our belt now.
So,
wow.
12 years combined between the two of you, another 6 years between the two of us, you know, yeah. So, because we've been doing this for 3 years, so.
We got a lot to share.
I mean, you're talking 19, 20 years total experience between, you know, the four of us to be able to impart some of that wisdom onto people, I think is something that makes it worthwhile for a listen.
Yeah, that's a good way. Wow. Sorry.
I mean, because we can talk about the markets, we can talk about our pyrography and whatnot, but at the same time, we have years of other business knowledge under our belt, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That definitely affects what we do today.
Absolutely. You know? Everything, it's like we're clay. We're being sculpted and shaped by our experiences and our environment constantly.
So how did you and Zona meet?
So I don't quite remember exactly. Sometimes I have a terrible memory when it comes to like details like this, but it was through Burn Club somehow. I mm-hmm. think it was the summit.
I saw you were presenting at the summit, the very first summit, and you were talking about finishes.
Yeah.
and that's how I met you unofficially was through the summit. And I remember I looked at your website and I don't think I joined right away, but I know I eventually did join. And then I had reached out to you for some reason or other. And then we just started talking about some other stuff. Like you said something and I just started a conversation. And then it's kind of a lot like what our conversations are like now.
It's true.
And like, I think that's how we met mm-hmm. is because I kind of force introduced myself to you. So to say,
that's totally fine. Yeah, I accept that.
So just for people who don't know, what's the Burn Club and the Summit?
Okay.
Oh,
so there is, an industry leader. Her name is Rachel, and she's not very active online currently. She used to be, but she kind of took a little bit of a step away from that for a while. But she is this huge industry leader in the wood burning space, and she was doing a lot of online wood-burning community building. So she was doing, like, she had a burn club. It was, I guess it was hosted through Patreon. It started off as an email list, and anyone who wanted, like, community news could sign up for her email list, and then she started a Patreon, and she had all of these different wood burners of different backgrounds, and people from all over the world had joined Burn Club, and she just continued to serve us with, like, wood burning challenges, and she had a blog for wood burning artists that was really good, and, you know, she was just putting a lot out there for the community. And one of the things that she had put on was this wood burning summit, and I think it was 22. It was online, and it was a week full of all of these different artists and presenters. She had a keynote speaker. She had different interviews. She had live burn sessions. And she had contacted a bunch of us pyros in the community through Instagram to see, like, if we would be willing to teach. And if we did, you know, what do you want to teach? Here's your little application form. And, you know, I'm going to put together an agenda of everyone who's going to teach what, and I'm going to put this together. And she did, and it was so successful. And the class, I think did I teach two? I don't remember. It's been a hot minute. But I know that the big one that I really prepped hard for was the class on finishes. Now, because Rachel had a lot of people and a lot of topics to get through the week, not all of the classes were as long as they could have been. So my finishes class was only supposed to be 20 minutes. But we learned very quickly that that was nowhere near enough time for me to be able to talk about finishes, you know. But I had put together this big finishes board, and I still have it hanging in my office space. I'll have to talk about it and bring it out sometime. But I had gotten, like, 20 different finishes. I splurged. I went all out. David made this huge board that had poplar, maple, cherry, sassafras. Was it walnut?
I think so.
And walnut. And he glued it up. And it was this massive board. It's like 3 feet long. And I took, like, a dozen or more different kinds of color, and I made a huge swatch board. And I, like, on the maple, I sectioned it off into a grid, and I did all these different colors this many times so I could test them with all of these different finishes and see which ones smudged and which ones, like, messed it up and which ones took away the shine and which one, you know, like, just really testing them out so then I could have really good experience and material to talk about in this wood burning or in this finishes class for the summit. So that's what that was. And I guess
and
that's
how
Zona...
That was a great program. And yeah. I think that's part of the gap that I've seen left behind in the community, which I think is what makes this podcast all that much more viable.
Sure.
Because there is I think that there's a desire for that kind of stuff. Clearly, there was, I remember those summits. Obviously, I was not a participant in them because I wouldn't know sassafras from, you know, a hole in the wall. But I remember that there was a great deal of participation in them,
yes.
Which means that there's people out there who are craving this information, people out there who are seeking this information out. And there's not, I mean, I do searches regularly, and I know there's some great pyrographers who, you know, put some content out there, mm-hmm. but a lot of them have fallen by the wayside to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, like, I don't even know if you could still get those recordings from those summits at this point in time.
You can.
You can?
You can. I was going to say, I think she might still have them for sale on her website as, like, passive.
That's great.
But I don't know.
Yeah, that's how she has it. Like, I have it downloaded, but yeah, you can buy them.
Yeah.
I looked at her website.
Yeah.
You'd hate for that stuff to just be lost to time.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's good stuff.
Because there was a lot.
It was a lot.
Oh, there was
a lot
of good stuff. I was so stoked when
it was free,
I found
too.
Out about it.
It was a free event, free summit.
If you wanted the recordings...
You could buy, like, the package deal that had all of the recordings and stuff, but, like, just to come watch, take notes, like, it was all free.
Yeah, it was really, really great.
Well, that was Walnut Hollow, right? Weren't they the sponsors of that?
They were one of them. We were one of them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what Woodburn Corner did. Her name's Rachel. She's at Woodburn Corner on Instagram still, but like I mentioned, she's not as active as she once was, and she doesn't do a lot of like the challenges and stuff that she used to collaborate with Walnut Hollow with. They put those on pause, and she's doing other things. She's living her life out in Oregon and with her kids and stuff, and she's teaching classes, I think. But as for her online presence, she really took a step back, and I think you're absolutely right, Brian. Like, there's this hole that was opened up when she took a step back. And like, there are a lot of people who are new to this art who want information, and it's not as, like, it's still out there, because like Woodburn Corner, she didn't just go away, you know, she didn't fall off the face of the earth. She's still out there, and her stuff is still out there. Her website, she's just not as active on the social medias to be promoting herself, so it's not as easily seen, it's not as easily put in front of people who could definitely benefit from it, you know. So yeah, I think that this podcast could do a good service kind of in that spirit, in that regard.
Well, before we wrap up, do you want to talk a little bit about what we have planned?
Sure. Great question. So we have the first, I think, 7 episodes of this podcast outlined just briefly, so we kind of know what topics we want to talk about. And looking at episode 2, what can we expect? Oh, yeah. Okay, so episode 2 is a big one. So we are splitting it up into part A and part B. And part A is going to be a deep dive into the BZ Fur Fur business and all about y'all's history, how you came to be, what y'all are doing. And then part B is going to be the same thing, but for us, for It's David and Renee, all about us, a deep dive into our business and all of that. And then we have a couple of like general topics planned out for episodes like 3, 4, and 5. And it's kind of like, I think episode 3 is like all of our favorite things. We're here to just like talk about all of our favorite things, our favorite burner and supplies and nibs and blah, blah, blah. And then episode 4 is our least favorite things. We're going to talk about the things that we've tried that we do not like, you know, because that's really good info. And then episode 5 is split up into a part A and part B too. And that is a general overview of how y'all do shows. And then part B is all about how we do shows. And we had specifically kind of like planned it out this way for these first few episodes to be broader topics, because we wanted people to like get an introduction to the podcast, get a feel for who we are, and kind of get a feel for like the things that we can talk about. We didn't want to just like immediately start this podcast out of the blue and like dive straight into a very specific thing. We just kind of wanted to give people like a easier, gentler like deep dive into what our world is about. And then for future episodes after that, we don't have them planned yet, but I know that we were talking about like very specific things, like we can talk about tents, we can talk about this nib, you know, like we can get into very specific stuff. So that's kind of the general outlook for this podcast and what we have planned for future episodes.
We could probably spend a whole day talking about sandbags.
This is true. Oh, how to weigh down your tent when you do an outshow market. That is a whole thing in and of itself.
It is.
It's so crazy. It's wild.
If you want to make a lot of money, get yourself in a city where they host outdoor markets a lot and be the weight renters, because you basically pay $1 a pound, and a lot of these tents need like 100 pounds of extra weight added.
Okay, so this is true. So what he's talking about, we did a show in Philly a couple of years ago, and the show requirements, like this was a very fancy show. It was juried. A juried show means that there is a panel of judges who look at your application and your pictures, and they decide whether or not you can be in their show. And these prices for these kinds of shows are like hundreds to thousands of dollars. They're not your local state fair pop-up market, $35. You know, these are like $600 booths, things like that. So anyway, with these more prestigious kinds of shows, they're usually run by like city councils, or I historical societies, things like that. And the rule for this show, for this park in Philly, was you had to have, I think, 50 to 80 pounds of weight added to each leg of your tent for like no less than 200 pounds. And it's because this area gets high winds and they will not be liable for any damage to your tent. So it is just a rule. It is a requirement. You have to have a tent and you have to bring weights. Well, weights are super expensive.
And they're hard to transport.
They are hard to transport, especially if you're just one person, because if you're trying to haul like, it, like think of like a dry bag of concrete, you know, those are 80 pounds. It's like, if you're a little old lady doing a show or whatever, you know, like if you don't have any help, that's a lot of weight you got to carry around. So it's a lot easier to just rent. And a lot of these organizations will be like, if you don't have a tent, here is a local renter in the Philly area who will come set up your tent for you. If you don't have weights, you can rent them from these people. They will come put the tent weights on your tent the day of, you know, and then they'll take them away. And it's a nominal fee, but like, honestly, so the guy that we got our weights from, he had filled like the 5 gallon Home Depot buckets. Was it with water? Was it sand? He just filled them, and that's what he brought around. And it was great. It met all the requirements, and he was making bank because nobody wanted to be hauling all of these weights.
Well, that's what we do now, is we carry around, and maybe this is the wrong episode to be talking about this, but we carry around four Home Depot buckets, and we have sandbags in them, but then, you know, if there's not a requirement to use sandbags, we just fill them up with water and lash them to the to the tent legs.
Yeah.
So much easier.
Yeah.
And then if we end up not using the buckets, we can turn them upside down and use them as seats.
Yes. So, yeah, that's what he means. There's like a whole world of tent weights, but it's wild. So anyway, that's just kind of some of the specific things we can get into in some of our future chats. Yeah, okay. Well, that about wraps up this episode, episode one of the Pyro Toasty Talks podcast. We look forward to talking to you in our next episode we're doing a deep dive into y'all's business. That's episode two. Alrighty, so in the meantime, stay toasty, and if you have any questions at all for either the BZ Furfur business or the It's David and Renee business, you can find us on our socials, which are linked in the show notes. We're both very active on our social medias, especially on Instagram, so that's where I would recommend you hitting us up. Alright guys, stay toasty!